Blog Talk Radio.
Hi there, I'm Katrina Blankenship, your host of Community Radio. Along with many special guests, we look into the strengths and weaknesses of local communities. Did you know that the strength of a community comes from the strength of its people? This radio broadcast is a grassroots project to build communities one person at a time. This Katrina has been through a hurricane myself. Through my journey, I continually meet people who are just like me, and I want to share our lives and our experiences with you. We're all learning on this journey. And why not learn from one another and help encourage and build one another to build a strong community? Listen right here every Thursday evening at 8 p.m. on Katrina.com. You'll be inspired. If you'd like to give us a call during the show, our number is 1-877-598-8549. That's 877-598-8549. Join in with us through Facebook or through our online chat here. Now, it's time for Community Radio.
Welcome to Community Radio, ladies and gentlemen. It is a beautiful evening here in Central Virginia. We are now March the 5th, believe it or not. This is Thursday evening. We here in Central Virginia have been blanketed with quite a bit of ice and snow this afternoon. It's been a very interesting day. And without further ado, we have Sergeant Vic with the Virginia State Police on the line with us tonight. I know that he is a very busy fellow, and he is definitely very busy taking care of a lot of things on our Virginia roadways. So I would like to give him a few minutes to tell you how things are out on the road and what the state of Virginia looks like at this point. Sergeant Vic, are you with us?
Yes, ma'am. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for being on the show with us tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Tell me a little bit about what's going on the Virginia highways. What have y'all experienced and seen today?
Well, our job started around 12 o'clock this afternoon, and from 12 to 4, we had around 150 crashes reported, with 5 involving injuries and about 209 calls for service. I checked around 5:30, and we had a little over 220 at that point. We're going to update again here probably in the next 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Over 250 calls for service. I just came from the west end back over here to the Palatine side, and from 295, 288, Route 60 are still very snow-covered, and you just need to be very particular tonight if you're on the roads, and especially tomorrow morning if you have an early morning commute, to just be aware of the ice, snow-covered roads, bridges, overpasses, and things such as that.
What part of the state got hit the heaviest? Can you tell?
The Richmond area, my area, we've had the most crashes throughout the whole state. Our Appomattox division out that way, they have probably around 120 at the time we had the 148. But between Appomattox and us, but the Richmond and outlying areas, we've had the most activity today.
Well, and with the temperatures falling, that's going to sure make for a hard travel, and you know, during the night and in the morning as well. What kind of advice do you give to motorists when it's like this? Probably stay home if you don't have to go anywhere.
If you can stay at home and enjoy a cup of coffee tomorrow and just enjoy the day, do that. But if you have to get out, we advise you, one, prepare your car before you go out. Make sure all your windows are clear. Have a full tank of gas. Your cell phone's fully charged. The biggest thing, and I just saw it driving home tonight, is decrease your speed. Speed's always a problem, and if you hit an icy spot, you're going to go off the road pretty quick. Wear your safety belt. Increase your following distance. A lot of times, you know, we get agitated and we want to, that person in front may be going a little slower than what we like, and we get a little bit too close, and if you're too close, you can cause a crash pretty quick. If you do get in a crash or you need to report a crash, #77 comes straight to state police. You can call that. Just let us know where you're at, if there's any injuries involved, and just all the particulars of that. And remember, too, the Virginia Move Over Law, Last week we had two troopers struck up in Northern Virginia. Fortunately, they're going to recover from their injuries. But by law, if you see flashing red or blue or amber lights, you're required by law to move that lane over if you can safely do it. And we need that, especially with this kind of road conditions and weather. So if you can safely move over, do that. If you're unable to move over, the law says you just slow down and proceed by with due caution.
Well, and that's probably one of the things that y'all worry about the most. When you pull over on the side of the road, you know, sometimes you don't have a lot of room to get over. And when you're helping a vehicle or you're having to stop someone, and it's so close to the next lane, and then moving over is so important to try to get out of the way. So I know y'all worry about that on a regular basis.
Yeah, you watch it, and you know, it crashes, and especially if you get involved in the crash, we ask people not to get out of the car and stand around, because if you're in an area where it is icy, another car could slide, and you're more protected being in that vehicle with something around you than being outside of it. But it is something, and right now the shorter lanes, you know, obviously being snow covered, you know, people not, you can't get all the way over. You just really have to be particular, and we watch that for our safety, for your safety, and for the motoring public.
Absolutely. Well, we know that you're really busy, so we're not going to keep you, and I know that your phone is ringing off the hook probably with all kinds of reports and things going on, and we appreciate you filling us in on things, and it's really a shame to hear so many crashes, but I guess when were most of the accidents during rush hour this evening?
They picked up during the rush hour. Fortunately, a lot of the offices, state offices, and some other businesses closed earlier. So, but between that, probably between 12 and 6 is when we had the most, and it started more for us from kind of Richmond north out towards Goochland and Louisa that way. And then as it gradually moved through, then the south side, Chesterfield, Prince George, Dinwiddie, started seeing more crashes down that way, but basically all over. So we just ask, if you have to go out in the morning, just please take your time, prepare, and we just want you to get to work safely.
That's right. Well, we appreciate you being on the show for a few minutes this evening, and thank you for always continuing to update us and let us know what's going on, and for all of your hard work. We appreciate your service.
Thanks for your time, and thanks for having me.
Thank you. Well, we appreciate the state police and all that they do, and all of the responders, whether they're fire and rescue or the state police or the local officials. You know, they have a lot of work to do when it's bad weather like this. They don't know what to expect with trees down and with accidents and with just a little bit of everything that goes on in weather like this. And, you know, it really does make it difficult when there's house fires and there's illnesses where they need to transport a patient. You know, those people, not only are they responding to crashes, but they also have to respond to people's medical needs, and it's very difficult to get in and out of people's driveways when it's weather like this. Wherever you're listening to us from, I'm sure that you are also facing, if you live on the East Coast, you're facing this same storm. I talked to someone in New Jersey earlier today, and they said that they were just getting nailed with quite a bit of sleet and ice, and it does make it very difficult. This has been a very interesting winter. You know, it seems like for the past few years in a row, we haven't got an awful lot of snow or cold weather in the beginning of winter. It seems like December, January has kind of been pretty mild. February, down in the end of February, it seems like that's when the snows really kick in. And then for February and March, it is definitely the time that we seem to be getting the most snow. And so I don't know what's going on here in Virginia and why we're kind of a little off kilter. We kind of laugh and joke about it and think that it's because they keep messing with the clock and keep changing the clock. And ever since they changed to Eastern Daylight Savings Time and given us a more extended summer and more extended time of longer days, that it seems like the clock is all messed up, and it seems like everything in nature is just not the way it's supposed to be. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But definitely God has it all in his control and in his hands. I know that around our place it was really good to get out. The past day or so, we went out into, had to go pick up the journals. And if you don't have one, make sure you get online and sign up on our newsletter and subscribe to it, and see if you can't pull down a copy of it online if you can. If not, we'll be glad to mail you one. But the Community Journal has been out on the on the road for or on the shelves for the past few days. And it was good yesterday afternoon. We had to deliver some more and do a few things. And we went into town, went into Richmond, and took a tour of the Library of Virginia late yesterday afternoon. And I wanted to share with you just a little bit of information. If you live in Virginia and you have the opportunity to go to the Library of Virginia, they have an exhibit that they are actually displaying right now. It's called To Be Sold. And it talks about Virginia and the American slave trade. And I'm going to tell you, it was a very touching exhibit. There were so many things that we learned, I learned, walking through that exhibit that just would break your heart. The way that the slaves were brought into America and they were sold and they were traded off and the things that they had gone through. You know, there's so much about American slavery that's just so devastating. There's so many aspects of it, too, that a lot of people don't even know what happened. But there was so many pieces of information that we gathered from that exhibit. I was really surprised at the way that, you know, years ago in the 1800s when they had this problem with slavery and they would buy and sell slaves, I was surprised at the way that they had flyers printed and there was copies of documents, of pieces of paper. There was a flyer, you know, that is almost as fancy done as it is today in our modern times of technology. But those flyers that were passed out and were talked about the auctions that they would have, they would say in the on the flyer, this is the date of this particular auction, and at this auction, we're going to sell horses, cows, farm equipment, and slaves. And it just broke your heart to take a look at these flyers and some of the things that were done, the money that was spent for these people, how that they were separated from their families, how that the mothers and the fathers were separated from their children. Sometimes the couples were separated. It was really sad to see what they went through and the prices that were paid for the people as they were sold. It was really heart-wrenching. And, you know, I thought about how that they were bought and sold, and I thought about how that they were treated and all of the things that they had experienced that is so similar to actually what we face today. And I know you probably think there's no way that we have this problem with slavery today in the same sense. But in a way, when you think about the way that our federal government actually works, and you think about the way that we are getting to the point where we're more enslaved to the government. We can't breathe without asking for help. We can't, you can't even have any, you know, things on your property without having to take account, you know, for them. There are people who have a junk car in their yard and the local government will fine them. There's so many rules and regulations. There's so much red tape. There's so many things that our local government puts you through, the state and the federal. We as citizens of this country, no matter what color we are also enslaved now. And it's almost, in some ways, worse than it was years ago because our rights are being taken away and our freedoms are being taken away. And it's really sad. I would encourage you to go and see this exhibit if you're in the area. I think it is an important exhibit. It's going to be, actually, I was just looking at the date. I think that it's going to be, it actually started October 27th and will go to May 30th of this year. And the Library of Virginia is open from 9 to 5 each day. If you've never been there, the Library of Virginia was actually created in 1823 by the General Assembly to organize and care for and manage the Commonwealth's growing collection of books and official records. The Library of Virginia houses the most comprehensive collection of materials on Virginia government, history, and culture available anywhere. and there are books, there's manuscripts dating back to the early colonial period there. The library's collection illustrates a very vast amount of information from the Commonwealth and documenting the lives of Virginians. I saw a lot of notes posted where people had found their family members and the genealogy of their family tree that they didn't even know existed. So not just with genealogy, but just Virginia's history and its past is amazing how many books are there, how many manuscripts. They have microfiche, they have old documents. So if you want to do any research and you want to look at the collections that are there, any of the maps, manuscripts, any kind of artifacts, I mean, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of documents there at the Library of Virginia. So we didn't even have time to go through a tenth of what was there, but they do put on an exhibit that is very, every few months, a new exhibit to talk about different people in their era of time and what documents. There's so much, like I said, so many manuscripts, so many documents that are and artifacts that they'll bring out and they'll put on display too. So any information you want, they're great people to work with. They'll answer any questions. And they're located downtown Richmond on Broad Street, right beside MCV Hospital, about two doors down from MCV Hospital on Broad. And it's a great, it's easy to park. There's a parking deck in under the building, and there's one beside a parking lot beside the building. It's very easy to get to. It's very easy to park, very easy to walk in the door, and the people there are great to work with. I want to talk to you for a few minutes also on a very local level before we finish the show tonight about a couple of things that are going on in our local community. Our school board here in Powhatan actually had a lot of problems. They had some issues with the supplemental retirement program. Those of you that follow our local politics and our local government, you know kind of what's gone on in the past year or so with that information and what's gone on. But what, I don't want to talk about the details of that. I want to talk about what happened through it and where we are now in a community. Our county has got a lot of serious problems. People can't get along, and it's not necessarily because they can't get along. It's because they just basically don't agree on certain things, and if some people don't get their way, they just pitch a fit. And our school board was hiding a lot of information, and our superintendent apparently was keeping documents from the Board of Supervisors that were asking about this information, and a lot of tension was there, and a lot of disgruntlement, and a lot of, you know, they wanted to know why this information was being held from them. And then, to top it all off, there was a lot of money that was transferred that wasn't supposed to be, that really shouldn't have been handled that way between our superintendent, and she shouldn't have really been part of the supplemental retirement program. And so there was a lot of money that was, you know, that transpired through that retirement program that shouldn't have been done. The program had already been cut out, and yet it was opened back up, and certain people got the benefits from it, and some people didn't. And so two of our board members, our Board of Supervisors, felt like that they needed more questions answered, and they needed to really get down to the bottom of what was going on. And so we had three supervisors who didn't agree, and apparently they voted the opposite direction. And Dr. Miera did not even have her lawyers to sue the county or to write up any documents to where that she was going to sue the county for a particular reason. And the board, three members of the board, decided that they were going to go ahead and give her $80,000. You know, a lot of citizens kind of felt like it was hush money, so she wouldn't sue the board in the in the future. And it was kind of a way to settle with her and be done with it and move on. And it really shouldn't have been done that way. A lot of citizens are very upset at the way that it happened. Long story short, now the school board is ready to ask for thousands and thousands of dollars for their budget and things that are going on. And there has been a lot of issues where some people felt like that the two boards could not come together in a meeting without needing a babysitter. And I will say that that's pretty much the way it is. And so a couple of the board members, Mr. Tucker, Mr. Melton, and Mr. Moore, when he was on the board, actually felt like that it was good, and some of them decided to go ahead and hire a mediator, a consulting company that would come in, a counselor basically, and hold everybody's hands while they were having the meetings. And so a lot of citizens felt like that was a waste of money. It was $6,000. It was a waste of money that they needed to do, and that we have adults here that should be handling situations without needing a babysitter to hold their hand. So at the workshop meeting a couple of weeks ago, well, last week I guess it was, they brought forth a resolution. Now that we have Mr. Nordvig on the board, Mr. Hodge brought forth a resolution that they needed to eliminate the mediator altogether, even though the mediator had gone to meet with the school board that afternoon. And, you know, really and truly, their hands were tied. Mr. Moore voted with Mr. Tucker and Mr. Melton to get this mediator, and Mr. Moore was not even going to be in office. He had already put in his resignation, and he wasn't going to be there anyhow. And so really, he shouldn't have even voted. And I said all along, and the citizens kept on pushing, that Mr. Moore shouldn't have even been allowed to vote for anything. It was the stupidest situation, honest, and that might not be the best word to use, but it was a very unorganized, unprofessional way of handling the whole thing between the board. He shouldn't have continued to be allowed to stay on the board and run for Commonwealth attorney and vote on issues that weren't even going to, he wasn't even going to be part of or privy to or work with in the future. There was no reason for him to vote on these things, but they allowed him to stay on the board. Of course, unless they had voted on it, there was no way. And, of course, Mr. Tucker and Mr. Melton was voting with Moore, and Williams and Hodge were voting against the three of them. So there was really nothing they could do against the law. They couldn't, by law, get rid of Mr. Moore. It was more of an ethical thing than anything. So they voted to have this mediator come in. Well, at the board meeting or at the workshop, last week, they brought forth a resolution for them to eliminate the mediator. And there was a lot of very heated discussion. I went back and listened to the audio tape. I didn't need to sit there and see the expressions on everybody's faces, because if you listen to the audio tape, you definitely know how the whole meeting went and what kind of tension was most likely in the room. And I think it was very uncalled for the consultant that they had then brought in to talk to them about the economic development plan to make her comments that the boards needed to get along before they could make any kind of economic development or things like that. It was almost like that she had been coached to say the things that she did and knew more about what was going on with the situation. In my opinion, this is my personal opinion, I felt like she really had no business making comments about that. She had not been here through the board meetings, through the things with the school board last year. She wasn't privy to everything that had gone on, so why was she making her comments? And I'm going to tell you, it's going to put a bad taste in everybody's mouth for sure when they try to move forward for economic development, because they're really not going to be able to work together very well, I guess, if you start on that particular foot. And then Laura McFarland, who is the editor for the Powhatan Today, wrote a letter, her editorial in the paper that came out yesterday, that she really felt that the situation that's going on in the county is not the way that Powhatan is supposed to be, and pretty much not the way that these people are supposed to act about different things. And it amazes me how that she knows so many things when she just moved here not too long ago. I don't even know if she lives in the county, and can write these things. And it's almost like the paper is written by certain people whether it's board members or it's people in the community, that pretty much tells her how to write. The last editor, it was the same thing. The editor before that was the same thing. She'll either stick in there and keep on just writing whatever they're telling her to write, or she'll get fed up like the rest of them and leave. But I'm going to tell you, Powhatan is really in a lot of turmoil, a lot of problems going on in the community. It is important in every community, no matter where you live and where you're listening to me from, that the citizens get involved with what's going on. And I don't know how it is in your community, but there's election coming up in November. A lot of constitutional officers and supervisors and board members, their positions will be up for re-election. And a lot of people need to really think long and hard about these positions and what they're running for, what their goals are, and ask a lot of very serious questions. In communities, we have had way too many problems for too long with people voting for their best friend, and they're voting on popularity and not on issues. And now we have the situation we do in our own local community where we have high taxes, and they're going up even more. We've got frivolous spending. We've got some crazy things that are going on in our local government where, you know, it's just impossible to get anything done, it seems like. And now we're moving in towards a budget season, and hopefully people will be able to work towards doing the right thing. Mr. Tucker made a statement that was posted on the front page of the paper that I thought was quite amazing. If you listen to the audio tape and you read the article, and they pretty much go hand in hand. Laura did do a good job with the article. She did cover all sides and all bases, but when I listened to the audio tape, I was very surprised at a comment that Mr. Tucker made. So two or three hold the process hostage because you know better, and the majority are misguided nitwits. So we really aren't sure if he meant that to Mr. Hodge, Mr. Nordvig, and Mr. Williams, or if he meant that the other people felt like everybody else were misguided nitwits. But who knows? Mr. Tucker always writes his epistle way before his meetings and reads it all, and so it's hard to really tell the direction that he really, you know, was he calling the others' names, or it's just so childish. It's just amazing. You see this in every community where people just think they can do whatever they want to do with people's money and continue to spend and continue to make decisions that make no sense for the communities. And the citizens are the ones that are suffering. And I'm going to tell you, people are sick of it. I see it and hear it all the time. They're tired of going to the meetings. They're tired of, you know, they feel like they're not getting anywhere. And we really need to work towards fixing those things. We've got people in our communities who desperately need help. And we've got a lot of wonderful stories, wonderful people that are doing a lot of good. But it just, we seem to be missing out on some of those good things because people are having a very difficult time doing the right thing. And when they get in office, they feel like they can do whatever they want to do. They are unapproachable. I've seen it on every level, from the sheriff to the treasurer to the Commonwealth attorney to the supervisors, senators, delegates, and I'm not calling any particular names, any community. I'm saying on every level I've seen how that they are unapproachable. Once they get in office, they don't have time to listen to you. They don't have time to answer your phone calls. They don't have time to listen to what you have to say. They're so much higher, on so much higher of a pedestal. I've gone up to people at meetings after a meeting was over and tried to talk to them, and I have seen the expression from people kind of like, why are you talking to me? Why are you bothering me? I don't have time for your conversations right now. And people are getting tired of it. And so once we get to that point in our communities and we get to that point on all levels of government, how do you ever build the fire back in the people once it's put out. I mean, it's almost impossible. And so I think people hope that they can see a difference come down the line, that they can change the board members, and that eventually that they can make a difference. And I'm not sure that a lot of communities are going to be able to survive because of the egos of people and because of the attitudes that people have. It's just a very difficult situation. And I think that they probably spend too much time saying the same thing over and over again. They always have to justify why they do what they do, and they have to say it over and over and over again. And I see that on both sides. I think that people need to just say, no, this is what we're going to do because this is right. This is what we're not going to do because this is wrong. And move forward. And just let it be as it is. I do think that the hand holder was ridiculous. And they probably lost $6,000, but they shouldn't have voted on it to begin with. So I blame the people that voted on it to begin with. And I blame the school board for causing this problem to begin with. And why would they let some things happen the way they did? And I tell you, we've got a lot going on. We've got a lot of things going on in our community that people need to really pay attention to and wake up and realize that a lot of things being done under the table, behind closed doors, and they need to really stay alert and stay focused. But in every community, there is possibility of change, and there is a possibility of fixing the problems that we have if everyone will come together and work together and will stop using the local media to tell their side of the story. I think that Warren Buffett will hate me for saying this tonight, but I think that their philosophy is no different than the rest of the liberal media, where they infiltrate the citizens' minds and get them to believe one particular thing, and they write their stories one way, and they are going in the direction of the way that they want to make people think that things are going. And so they write these stories. They have beautiful documents. They have the biggest and the best printing presses. The papers look great. It gets people's attention. They've got great graphics designers. But you know what? I'm going to end the show with this statement. They can have the prettiest documents in the world, and they can use all the money that they have to make these documents to where that they can blind the people. But you know, when we print the journal, I'm telling you, we're on a shoestring budget. We do the radio show, we're on a shoestring budget. Everything we do is on a shoestring budget. But I believe that if you're doing the right thing and you're going in the right direction and you're telling the truth and you're doing the very best you can, that God is going to take that and he's going to use it. And he's going to speak to people's hearts. And he's going to speak to the people so they know the truth, and that they are open-minded and they're open to the truth, and they can decipher between right and wrong. Using the right words sometimes is very difficult. When I'm writing a story where I'm trying to cover a meeting or cover something that we have, you know, talked about in a community or any kind of event, it's very difficult sometimes to come up with the right words because you don't want to be too wordy and you don't want to be too vague. And so I pray a lot for the Lord to really give me the right words to say. And he always does. They always come. Usually they come at the last minute. Usually they come in a very quick amount of time. And I'm very grateful for that. But I believe that if he is in it and we're doing the right thing, that it will all come together. If you live in our area, I would encourage you to be involved in our community. The Board of Supervisors and the school board will come together for their joint meeting. They're starting their budget process reading here to give you the budget scene at the workshop is what will come before the board approval at its meeting at 7 o'clock on Tuesday, March the 17th at the Village Building. The projected budget is for $44 million, which is $819,000 more than the adopted fiscal year of the 2015 budget of the school system is currently operating under at this time. I'm reading. And it's important to follow the meetings and to follow what's going on and to give your input. So I would highly recommend that you stay involved in your community no matter where you are and help the board and help the school board be able to make the right decisions by voicing your opinion, and your public comments are very important to everybody. So we appreciate you listening to the show tonight. There's a lot of great information coming down your way, and we've got some great guest speakers scheduled. We're still waiting to get Congressman Hurd on with us, and we're hoping to have the folks from Moorefield Mine on with us next Thursday night, and they can tell you all about the opening for the spring session. And this is their 85th year over at Moorefield Mine and Amelia. And so we're going to talk to them, and they're going to share with you some good information about taking your family or your school system out to Moorefield Mine to mine gems and minerals. It's an amazing place to go. So we'll be giving you some more information on that next Thursday night. I am Katrina Blankenship, your host of Community Radio. We appreciate your support. Please give us a call anytime during the week at 804-598-9301. And my email address is Katrina, K-A-T-R-I-N-A, at Katrina.com. May God bless each and every one of you. Have a great evening.
I'm proud to be an